presence. I just want to say it's been a great joy for me. Of course, I've known Shane for some time, and he's been a dear friend to me through the years. And now getting to meet Christy has just been a blessing, and she's just a great host. I don't know why she wears that hat, because she's got a beautiful head. And I just love to be with them, and I've had such a great time spending time with them. And they have been great hosts to me, and we've just laughed and had a wonderful time. And it's been a pleasure for me to spend time with them, and then to have been able to get with other folks and go out to restaurants and be in people's homes. Everybody, nobody has said a thing out of the way to me in any way, and that's getting to be a rare thing. But I just appreciate so much. I'm going to go back home, I'll tell you, a better person, because I've been here and been with you and seen your faith and your determination and these young people that are here. You've got some great young people. They've all said nice things to me, and that means a lot to an old person. When young people say something nice to you, I expect the old folks to be that way, but when young folks do it, it sure means a lot. And so thank you, young people, and all you old folks who are showing me how to do it. You know, I'm not there yet, but I'm catching up with most of you. And to see how you just come and you encourage a young guy like me, I appreciate that so much. So thank you for everything. The elders, thanks for sticking your neck out. I know you didn't know me or know much about me, and you let me come anyway, and I hope I didn't hurt your work in any way, but I just thank you and love you for what you're doing. I know a little bit about what it is to be an elder and the time and the energy and the tears that it takes to do what you men are doing. God bless you for that. And the good deacons that you have who work under you and serve, I'm certain in a wonderful way you wouldn't have this going what it is without them. But this is a great bunch of people, and you've got a great preacher, and you've just got wonderful things going, and I just hope that the old devil doesn't sneak up on you and mess it up in some way. You just keep watching and make sure you keep doing what you've been doing. I want you to open your Bible up tonight to the 7th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew. And then notice here, when Jesus really is not, some have said that it's an invitation, but I believe by what I've studied that this in Matthew the 7th chapter in verse 13, that it is actually a command that's being given. When Jesus says in Matthew 7 and verse 13, he says, "Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way which leadeth unto destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it." I want you to think about as Jesus comes now to the end of this sermon and begins to make some application of what you always want the end of any sermon, is you want people to realize it's time to make a decision. It's time to decide something here. When you go through and listen to a sermon at the end of it, there always should be some kind of a determination, either in yourself to say, I'm doing okay, but I'm going to do better, or maybe you're not doing what you ought to do, and you need to go home and get on your knees and ask God to forgive you, or maybe you've not obeyed the gospel yet. And so it's time that my grandmother called some people, you old folks might remember the old term, wigwam. A wigwam is somebody who sits on the fence, and his wig's on one side, his wam's on the other, and he just doesn't get off the fence, you know, and he just sits there. Well, you know, you can't be a wigwam and go to heaven. You've got to somewhere along the way put your feet down and stop and say, okay, now it's time to do something about what I've been doing, thinking about all this week. And so maybe tonight it might be that somebody will come to think about that. And so notice when Jesus here, he's been doing this through the sermon. He's always comparing two different ways. There's always only really two ways to go. You either go in the way that is right and you choose treasure that is in heaven, or you choose treasure that's on earth, or you either become a light and a salt of the world, or you cover your light up and hide it, or you respect the law of God, or you don't. And so there's always, throughout this entire sermon, there's been two. You see this in the book of Deuteronomy, the 30th chapter. And I believe it's about verse 36 or so, where there Moses said, God told the people, I put before you this day life and death, blessings and cursing. Choose life. And so God is saying, you need to stop today. He was telling Moses, and over through that text, you see today, this day. And so right now, this may be a time. It may be the time in your life to do something to change everything about your future. And so we see here, notice when he begins by this, he says, to enter ye. I want you to think about the fact that this is an individual situation where you have to make up your own mind. Doesn't matter what other people do, When you, there may be a lot of other young people here, maybe know about the gospel, or maybe some older folks who know they need to. And you may be sitting away, well, maybe if somebody else goes, I'll do it. Let me tell you, you need to make up your mind, because you, one day, you're going to stand before God. And so you need to enter in as an individual and not let the crowd. You know what we sometimes do? We want to go with the flow and go with the crowd. But here, Jesus is appealing to individuals. He says, enter ye in at the straight gate. And notice why he tells us to do that. Because if we don't enter at the straight, notice this is the way our straight jacket is spelled. Have you noticed that? This is the straight for something confining and restricting. And so you just can't go everywhere you want to go. Somebody said going to heaven is kind of like what are these big horns that cheerleaders used to use? I forget what you call it, a shape of a cone. But you shout in one end, it echoes your voice out the other. If you're going to go to heaven, what you want to do is go into that narrow beginning. And when you get in that narrow beginning and you go that way, you'll find that inside there's the grace and the mercy of God and joy and happiness and all the things that will make you happy inside that. But if you turn that cone around and try to go in the big end and then try to funnel yourself through the little, you'll fight and fuss all the way. So the best thing to do is just to enter at the straight, narrow gate that leads, don't you see, to the other direction from where this wide gate goes. So there's two ways, two kinds of religions, two kinds of people. And what many people tell us today, you know, is that all religions are the same. Have you ever talked to people who talk that way? See, that all religions are the same. You know what that says? Or you might have heard somebody say, you know, all Chinese look alike. You know what that means? They don't know any Chinese. That's what that means. When you think somebody looks like all of them, you don't know any of them. And when you say one religion is as good as another religion, what that means is you don't know anything about any of them. Because Jesus said, let me tell you, there is a significant thing to learn about that. And that is, there's a way to go to heaven. And what you've got to do if you want to go to heaven is you've got to enter at the straight gate. And notice he says, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. So there is a way. And there's a way that many people want to go. I drove a son of mine, my oldest son, down here to Florida, I don't know what, 92 or somewhere along there, when you all had several hurricane come across the southern part of Florida and ripped a big hole all the way across the southern part of the state. I was driving down here toward it when that was coming, and the interstate, as far as I could see all night long, was going the other way. Everybody in Florida was going up to Georgia or somewhere to get away from it, and I was going down, and I told my wife, after about 4 or 5 hours driving in the dark, I said, you know, something, I feel kind of strange here. I feel like I'm going the wrong way. I feel like everybody's going the other way. And she said, well, I don't know why it bothers you. You always go different from everybody else. Well, I'm going to tell you, we've got to learn, if we're going to go to heaven, we've got to go. Don't matter where everybody else goes. Don't worry. Don't look at other people. Don't think about that. Matter of fact, Jesus shows us here in these verses. If you look down at verse 14, when he goes on to say this about us, he says in verse 14, but straight is the gate, and there's the way that leads to life. And few there be that find it. Beware of false prophets, which have come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravening wolves. Here's a picture of us and a wolf coming in among us. Do you know much about sheep? You know, we're like sheep. You ever thought about that? The Lord compares us to sheep. I read one time about a boy in school, and his family raised sheep, and he dealt with sheep all the time. And his math teacher said, Johnny, if you've got 100 sheep in a fold and one of them jumps out, how many sheep do you have left? He said, zero. She said, Johnny, you don't know your math. He said, I might not, but you don't know sheep. When one does it, the whole bunch will do it. And I talked to one man one time, was raising sheep, and he said he had a stick up on the gate, and something spooked one of the big sheep in that flock, and it ran and jumped and knocked the stick down and jumped out. He said every one of them ran, and the stick was no longer there, but every one of them jumped where the first one did. We're like that, you see. We tend to look around and measure what we're doing, but what other people, the Bible's telling us not to worry about that. Don't worry about the crowd. Don't worry about where everybody's going. You make up your mind. What you're going to do is you're going to be different from other people, and you're going to do what God says, and you're going to go in the way that is restricted and confining. My dad, years ago in 1973, I bought a brand new cargo Dodge van, and I went down to see my dad, and I got down there. I said, Dad, I want you to look at my new van. He said, oh, I'm so glad you got that van. He said, I really need it. I need you to help me out. I said, what is it, Dad? He said, I bought two calves, and they're about 5 miles from here, and I want you to bring those calves home in your new van. I said, Dad. And he said, yeah. He said, I don't have any way to get them home. And he said, what we'll do is we'll go through the creek. We'll drive through the creek. There'll be no cars. We'll have to get in a hurry. And if the cattle get crazy, we can just stop and sit till they calm down. So we'll go over and get them, and we'll bring them back. And so I said, oh, okay. So we got to go over there. And we got and these calves were about 100 pounds apiece. He said, you just get them in a headlock back here and hang on to them. And I said, are you sure we can do it? He said, oh, yeah, we can do it. So I get those calves up in the back of there. We go down in this creek, and there's all kind of sharp rocks and trees and big holes of water. We're going around, and these calves got excited, and they buttered up the whole place with something inside, and we were sliding this way and sliding that way and sliding. And we got home, but let me tell you, nobody passed us on the roadway. We were all alone going, and it was treacherous and dangerous, but let me tell you, we got home safely. And so you go through life, you need to see the Lord's telling us something about that. And he's really going to show us in the next few verses on down that when we do what we're doing, when we build this foundation in our life on this rock in a storm, the storms are going to come. And so what we see here is a picture of people being told to enter in at this straight, enter in at this narrow way, this confining way. And when a person does that, Jesus says, when you do that, you won't be going where the many go. So if you say, well, what is everybody else doing? You're on the wrong track if you're thinking that way. You just look at your Bible and say, I'm going into the narrow, confining, restricted way. I'm not going to go in the way that many go, because notice he says, for the reason why people do that is because straight is the gate and narrow is the way. So this way is restricted and it's confining. And when we get in this way that's restricted and confining, notice he said, this way leads unto life, and few there be that find it. Now think about when you look at what that says for a moment or two. You're being commanded to go into this way and not to look around you and look at other things or think about other things. You just go into this way, enter into that. But now notice there's another enter in these verses. If you drop down now to verse 24, you find something else being stated about this conclusion and a reason to make a decision. When Jesus says in verse 21 of this chapter, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. And notice Jesus now is telling us, when you think about the entering into this narrow way, I want you to think about what really is the, first of all, the claims of Jesus. Have you ever noticed in these verses the claims Jesus are making? When he preached this sermon to people, and they were concerned about who he, whether it was the Son of God or whether it was somebody blaspheming God. And when you look at him saying, notice again he says, not everyone that saith unto me. Jesus is telling people, you're going to stand the judgment day, and you're going to say unto me, Lord, Lord. Now think about that. That was a tremendous claim. He said, you're going to stand before me, and you're going to say, Lord, Lord. And he says, not everyone. That literally can be rendered, no, not one. That can literally be rendered that way. No, not one person says, Lord, Lord, can enter the kingdom of heaven. But he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven, and notice, my Father which is in heaven, that's another large claim that Jesus was making to these people. My Father which is in heaven. And then he says in verse 22, many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you, depart from me, ye that worketh iniquity. And notice Jesus is showing that his will and his Father's will are the same thing. And what you need to understand is that you're going to stand before him and give an account. He's going to be the one to give the verdict. When you think about the statement in verse 1 of this chapter, it's always concerned me about how where Jesus said, judge not, lest you be judged. And we understand, of course, that's talking about hasty, unfair, when you don't know something about people. Have you ever thought about some of the decisions Jesus made? Would you have ever made some of his decisions? I mean, when you see Jesus walking down the road and there's a little short man up in a tree who was a tax collector and had been taking money from people and doing things he shouldn't have been doing. And Jesus said, Zacchaeus, come down, for salvation has come to your house today. Would you have said that about Zacchaeus? And you see all the things when a woman is in the temple and she throws 2 pennies in the collection, and you know what Jesus said? She put in more than all the rest. Would you have said that? Would that have been your judgment about somebody? You probably thought, well, that poor thing, she ought to be able to do better than that. When you just start looking at the judgment that Jesus made, it makes you realize we are pretty hasty many times, and we make judgments about people and say things about people when we ought to be more careful. And we could just go through. Can you imagine Jesus hanging on the cross and looking over this ignominious figure of a man who's been beaten and nailed to the cross next to him, and Jesus saying to this man on the cross, this day shall thou be with me in paradise. Would you have made that judgment? Would you have said that? You see, we've got to be careful, good people, about how we sometimes think we know the motives of people, know their heart, and we don't know that. We so often think things we don't know. We need to quit doing that and be careful. And we need to realize that what's going to happen is that Jesus is the one that is going to decide who's going to go to heaven and who's not going to go to heaven. And notice, not only do we see that when Jesus makes that statement and says that about himself, which probably shocked a lot of people, I'm sure. So we see, first of all, the claims that he made are somewhat amazing. But now listen to what if you notice what the verdict is, or the issue. The issue is, if you want to go to heaven, what you've got to do is you've got to do the Father's will. That's the issue. And Jesus helps us to understand it by illustrating it for us. You see, if we hear what God says and do it, we're one kind of a person. If we hear what God says and we don't do that, we're another kind of person. Now, Luke picks this picture up in Luke, the 13th chapter. And Luke tells us that we need to strive to enter into this narrow way. And he paints a picture of somebody. When a man does this, what he does is he digs down deep and finds a foundation and builds on the foundation. So you strive, you see, to enter this way that few find. And then you dig down deep and you lay a foundation down there. Now, you know, when you think about foundations and what that's all about, I had a friend. I grew up in the country, spent most of my time in the country as a little fella, and I moved to the city, and I never have been real smart and sharp, and I always was doing things I shouldn't be doing. And my buddy called me one time, and he said, "You know, Gary, I got this old farmhouse over here, and I don't have a shed, and I need to have a place to work on car motors, and I'd like to dig a basement under my house." I said, "Son, hang on, I'll bring my shovel, we'll be right at it." So we went over there, we started digging. We dug stairwell down on the side of the house, dug in there, and we dug underneath the house, and we noticed when we started digging where the house was that there was no foundation. They just stacked some old rocks around the house. That's the way they dig old farmhouses. So we just took those old rocks out of the way. We dug on down in there. We dug out a place about maybe 10 by 10 big down in there. He carried his toolbox down there. He said, "Oh, this is nice," and he put him a bench down there. "Oh, this is wonderful." Well, he called me about a month later and said, "Gary, there's a problem." I said, "What is it, buddy?" He says, "It's not big enough." I said, "Well, hang on, I'll be right over." Well, we went over there. We dug out about another 10 foot along the side of that house, along the end of it, you know. He got down in there, he put lights in it, and boy, he just loved it. Well, it went on about a year after that, and we had a 2-week rain. And he called me on the phone. He said, "Gary, get over here quick." I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Bring your your blocks and jacks and get here quick." I said, "What's the matter, old buddy?" He said, "I was sitting in the house watching TV, drinking a glass of tea, and all of a sudden I heard this screeching noise, and I felt like an earthquake, and looked down, and my glass was sitting, my tea was crooked in my glass, and I tried to straighten the table up, and all of a sudden the house was sinking in the basement." So we had to get down there and jack it up. You see, there was no foundation. But you know something? You couldn't see that. You couldn't see there was no foundation. What we'd done, we were dug under there, and you couldn't notice that. The only way you could ever figure out there was no foundation, you know how to, it had to rain. Storms had to come. Troubles got to come. You know what reveals whether what we're building on the rock or not? It's disease. It's the divorce. It's death. It's trouble. It's trial. It's problems. And in this world where we're living, good people, we're going to face them. We don't know what between us. I tell folks, I know more about what's going to happen to me after I die than before I do die. I don't know what's between me and the grave. I don't know what's over there waiting on me yet. Something may come that I hadn't thought about. Let me tell you better build on the foundation because the storms are going to tell. And you won't know until the storm comes because you can't see people's foundation. Some people, when they start building it, you don't think about the fact that building something, it takes a while to dig down and build a foundation. And when you build it, nobody can see it. But if you don't have that foundation, when the storm comes, that's when the trouble comes. Now notice, when we see Jesus helping us see the issue here, is that we need to do his Father's will. And look at what he says in verse 24. In verse 21, he said, "Do my Father's will." In verse 24, he says, "Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I like him to a man who builds his house upon the rock." Now notice, Jesus said, "What my Father says, you're going to be judged by what my Father says." And now he says, "You know what else? You're going to be judged by what I say, what I'm saying." So my Father's will and my will are the same thing. And the issue is, have you heard what my Father said? And have you made a decision that you're going to do what my Father said? So that's the two things that makes an old boy build on the foundation. Now, people who don't do that, they're building a sandcastle. Have you ever built a sandcastle? Get down in the coast somewhere, get the sand piled up, and you build up, and then the tide comes in, you go out the next day, and that thing's gone. Well, I'm going to tell you, some people, their life is a sandcastle. They do a lot of things. They hear, did you notice when you look at the foolish man, notice what Jesus says about him? When you drop down there to verse 23 says, "Then I will profess on them, I never knew you. Well, let me back up. Those who said they were doing this in his name and by his name, verse 23 then says, and then will I profess on them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that worketh iniquity. Here's a picture of people who they're going to stand before the Lord and say, Lord, look at all these things. We did this in your name. And they're going to say, we cast out demons. We did amazing things in your name. But he said, I never approved of you because you didn't do what I told you to do. You practice iniquity, lawlessness. And so the danger, don't you see, is that if we're not careful, we can go through the motions of having a religion. And notice these people, the foolish man, notice what he does. He says, when the rains descended on this man who built the house on the rock, and the rain descended and the floods came and the winds blew and beat upon the house, and it fell not, for it was found upon a rock. And every one that heareth these things of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. And the rains descended, the floods came, the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. Now notice, what that helps us to see is the danger of us listening to what God says, and we can all do it, we can all listen to God, and then we can go do something else or not do what God said. And so our danger, all of us have got to be careful about, is making sure when we take our Bible in our hand and begin to look at what God says to us, there are two kinds of religion, there are two kinds of ways, two kinds of builders, two kinds of houses. And what are we talking about when you build your house on the rock or on the sand? We're talking about building your life on. What do you build your life on? What is the foundation of your life all about? Where do you go to think about what am I going to do and why? How should I do it? Do we ever stop and think when we're stuck somewhere, what does the Bible say about that? And try to come back here and look at what this book says and to do those sort of things. And so Jesus is telling us, good people, what we've all got to do is we've got to make sure that we make up our mind what we're going to do. And when we go to doing that, what we've got to do then is read what the Lord said, first of all, and then go do that. And when we do that, my friend, we're building on a rock. And the storms of life are going to test every one of us. I don't care who you are. There's going to be something come. It's going to test you and it's going to try you. And I've seen in my life over and over already so many things I would have never dreamed have come into my lifetime. And I see now even some more dangers that are coming. And I know what's going to happen. It's going to test me. And I've seen people where I've been for 40 years. And I've seen people who didn't study their Bible. They didn't try to get involved. They didn't try to work and do things. And I knew chances are they weren't doing what they should be doing every day. And you know what happened to those people? Those people I was always worried about. I was always concerned about them. They fell away. Some trouble came. Some problem came. And they got discouraged. And they fell away. And so what these verses help us, it seemed to me, to see is that if you notice in these verses what it really shows us, it shows us, first of all, that this message is a defining message. Notice this message defines something. It defines who can go to heaven and who cannot go to heaven. And it tells us that the issue is, again, that we do. And notice the verdict. When you look at the verdict, have you thought about what is the worst thing in the world can happen to somebody? I was telling somebody today about my sister. She died of cancer at age 40. And her body shriveled up. You could see every bone in her body. Her teeth even looked like they turned black. And I'd never seen anybody look like that in all my life at 40 years of age. And I thought, what in the world can happen to a person that could be worse than that? And I've looked at a lot of things in life where I've seen something like that as the worst thing that can happen to somebody. But I'll tell you what the worst thing in the world can do that can happen to somebody is for God to say to you one day, depart from me, ye that worketh iniquity. That's going to be the worst thing that can happen. And so here's the picture now of a defining message that tells us, number one, who can go to heaven? It's anybody who wants to listen to God and do His will. But now notice something else about that. It also is a divisive message because it shows us that here is the people being divided into two categories. There's not three categories. There's not four categories. There are two categories, and you either do what God says or you don't do what God says. It's dividing people into two categories. And so I've got to decide which side of the fence am I going to stand on. Am I going to take my Bible, read my Bible, and say, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I might not know all there is about that, but whatever it says, that's what I'm going to do. I've got to make my mind up. I've got to decide about that. Am I going to enter into this confining way? Or am I going to do what I want to do and just say, well, I'll just be a free thinker and do what I want? I've got to decide. Because this message is a divisive message. It divides people into two categories. But notice something else about it. It also is a demanding message. When Jesus says to us to enter into this narrow and confining way, it's demanding that we not do it our way. That we understand Christianity many times is like a straight jacket, trying to do God's will when it's difficult and restricted to you and uncomfortable and things you don't like to do. Have you noticed how many times in life there have been things you want to do and you knew that if you do what God says, you can't do that. You can't do everything you want to do. And you've got to understand going through this confining gate means I've got to leave some things off and leave some things behind. I was in a country, I won't tell you where, several years ago. And it's a country where people are always bribing people and doing things underhanded. And I was at the airport coming back to the States. And this man came up there and he had a wash machine about this big. And he wanted to take it to the United States and give it to somebody in the United States. And so he came up to the x-ray machine there to get his tickets. And the man said, you can't check that. It's too big. He said, well, listen, I want to take this with me on the plane. The man said, you can't do it. He said, wait a minute. He said, there you go. He said, okay, you can take it. So he goes on by this little boy and he goes down to the x-ray machine. We get down to the x-ray machine. They said, that won't go through the x-ray machine. You can't put that on the plane. You can't take it. It's too big. He said, wait a minute. He handed out some more money. He said, okay, go on. Well, he takes his box. He goes scooting. And I thought, I'm going to watch this old boy go all the way down to the plane. He went down to the plane. They got up there, got up to the stand to tell that lady what he wanted. And she said, you can't take that on her. He said, no, wait a minute. Well, he gave her some more, you know. Well, then he got ready to go and get on the plane. When he got down to go down that plane, everybody was fighting him. He was pushing that thing down through the aisle. When he got up that plane door and tried to turn that thing to get in the door, he saw he couldn't win. He couldn't do it. And I thought, you know, if everybody wants to take everything in your life and take it with you and get on the airplane where you're going, you'll never get off the ground. We've got to leave some things behind. This is a restricted way. It's a confining way. And something has got to be left behind if we're going to go through this narrow, confining way. And so Jesus is helping us see that this way is a demanding. It demands something of us. It demands that we leave some things behind. But notice also, it is a drawing message. When Jesus said, if you do the Father's will, if you enter into this narrow way, what you will find is you will one day find where you want to go. And so you just determine what you're going to do is you're going to enter into the narrow way. Now let me say this to you about all that. Have you ever thought about the fact that while you're living in this world and things you do and suffer and struggle, the difficulty sometimes, and how you get weary from that because you have to go against the grain. You have to stand alone. You have to do without things. The first year I went to Zimbabwe with a fellow named Foy Short. We went all the way across the country, all the way up to Victoria Falls and stayed up there for a good while. And so when I got ready to go back home, I'd been over there for about 6 weeks, I thought I'm going to set my watch and see how long it takes me to get home on my journey from here going back home. So I hit my stopwatch, and what we did then, we got in a little donkey cart. We got in a donkey cart and went down this pathway until we got to a road. Then we got a taxi cab, went down to the town, went down, got to town, and got in a bus, and went over to the main city. And then we got on a train, and we drove this train from Bulawayo all the way up here where we were in this big city, and it took 13 hours to get up there. So we get on the train, and they said, well, y'all just go to sleep. We're going to go down, and we'll get down in the morning. So the old boy sets off going back down south across the country, and what he did, he went to sleep. And he forgot to realize in the middle of the country there's a big mountain range, and you have to speed that train up to get over the mountain range. We got up on the top of the mountain range, and we could all feel the train jerking and steaming, and so it couldn't get, so he had to back up for an hour and go back for an hour and speed up and come and run up down and get over. And so finally we got down there. We were a couple hours late, and so we had to get a taxi cab and go to the airport. So I got on an airplane. Well, I should have told you, on that train, they call their trains a roach coat. When you go to sleep, open your mouth, bugs get in your mouth, and they get all over you. But anyway, we went down that way. So then we got on the plane, and we flew all the way from there to Brussels, Belgium, and then on over to New York. I got home, and I got to my house. It took me 56 hours, 56 hours of travel to get home. It was difficult. It was a strain. I was wore out. What if somebody would have said to me, listen, we're going to let you fly home on French air. We fly at a Mach 1 up above in the outer atmosphere, fly up high and come down, and we can get to Madison, Indiana in about 2 hours, and we'll let you watch a movie and eat a steak on the way. But when we get to Madison, what we're going to do is we're not going to land. We're just going to fly around, let you look down at Madison, and we're going to run out of fuel, and we're going to crash and burn. Now, which way you want to go, Gary? You want to get on the roach coach and get on the old donkey cart and go through all this trouble and difficulty and get there? Or do you want to go on the fastest plane you can fly? Can I say to you that you need to understand that destination, good people, destination is much more important than the mode of travel. I don't care what you've got to go through. I don't care how long the journey may seem, how much you may not understand, how much you may suffer. Don't you ever get discouraged by going into the narrow way. And by building on the foundation of what God says, you just keep doing it. Don't get discouraged. Don't give up. Don't quit. And you're going to find out one day. I know sometimes you're going to think, oh, this is a lot further, and it's going to take me a lot longer, and cost me more than I ever imagined. And sometimes it will. But I want you to see that what Jesus is trying to get us to see is we have to decide. We've got to make up our mind whether we're going to enter into this confined, restricted way and not try to do it the way everybody else does. There was a girl in Madison years ago, and she came to services one evening, and she had shaved all her hair off and painted her fingernails black. She had on all these black clothes. And so my wife said, honey, what in the world are you doing? And she said, oh, Miss Sandusky, I've decided I just want to be different. And my wife said, well, honey, I understand there's some other girls at school that have been shaving their hair off and painting their fingernails black and wearing all black clothes. She said, oh, well, yeah, there's some other girls doing it too. And my wife said, well, honey, you're not being different. You're being like some other people. And she said, well, yeah, I'm being like some of them. My wife said, let me tell you, you want to be different? Do you really want to be different? My wife said, you go to school and you be a Christian and you do what is right, you dress right, you live right, you talk right, you treat other people right. And my wife said, you will be like a watermelon in a tomato patch. Everybody will see you and everybody will know you. Well, that's the way it is. We've got to decide which way we're going to go. We can't cower into the world and go with the flow. We've got to make up our mind to build on the unmovable foundation. If you're tonight and need to obey the gospel, can you see what we're trying to get you to decide to do? Obey the gospel. If you've done that and you know you're not doing what you ought to do, why don't you do something about that tonight? Why don't you change your life and become committed to following Jesus? If you're here and need to respond in any way, why don't you come?